Welcome back to Cartooncast, a fortnightly podcast hosted by two adults who aren't ashamed to proclaim their love for cartoons. I'm Christina Warren.
And I'm Micah Sargent. And this week we're talking about one of Christina's favorites, The Simpsons. The Simpsons. I know, you've been bringing The Simpsons up quite a bit in different shows that we've done.
And I have to.
Right. I mean, there are a lot of comparisons to make. The show is prolific, to say the least. And so I am happy to finally kind of get a taste of The Simpsons and some of the episodes that you enjoyed. So for the dear listeners out there, I asked Christina to pick an episode for me to watch, and then she picked an episode for her to watch. And of course, we watched both of them. And so those will be the ones that we're talking about today. But I think, you know, before we launch into that, Christina, I'm just curious, you know, let's say there's somebody who hasn't really watched The Simpsons before. So me, for example, I've watched a little bit of The Simpsons, but never like sat down and spent a lot of time watching The Simpsons. I've seen plenty of clips and know some of the, you know, the callbacks and things like that. But what is the reason that you're drawn into The Simpsons? And, you know, why would someone else maybe want to check out the show?
Well, I think when we start to talk about modern animation, honestly, I think it starts with The Simpsons, because they're kind of different phases of animation. You know, you obviously had kind of the Walt Disney era and the early Warner Brothers cartoon era in the 30s and 40s. And then you had kind of the Hanna-Barbera era in the 60s with the Flintstones, as we've discussed, and the Jetsons and some things like that. And then you kind of got into, the Saturday morning cartoon era, also again kind of led by Hanna-Barbera in the 80s. But in 1989, when The Simpsons debuted, in December of 1989 on the Fox network, you know, it was the first time in many, many, many years that we'd had a primetime cartoon show. And it changed the landscape of not just animation, but of television. I think that it is not at all ridiculous to say that it is one of the most important television shows in the history of the medium. And it is certainly, I would argue, the most important animated series. And I would also argue that I think that everything that we've discussed on this podcast, with the exception of you know, some of the stuff that came before it, has all been influenced by The Simpsons in some way, whether that's with story development, whether that's with the fact that they make references to so many different things, whether it's the ability to appeal to multiple audiences, whether it's, kind of the use of guest stars and people in those sorts of roles. And even when it just comes to animation style stuff, this show has influenced so much. And so for me, you know, as a longtime fan of the show, and because I literally grew up with it, it debuted when I was in the first grade. You know, it's one of those shows I've literally grown up on. I think that it's important to kind of look at the modern kind of animation landscape, which is so vast and works on, you know, multiple levels. And it's to me completely, I can't even imagine a universe where what we have now would exist if The Simpsons hadn't happened.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. It's clearly a show that sparked a huge portion of the things that we watch now. And I think that there's almost no one, at least, who hasn't heard of it. I you know what I mean? Like you can say The Simpsons and people at least know what it is.
But you know Bart, you know Homer.
Exactly.
You might not know the in jokes. You might not know some of the more intricacies, but even as you're saying, you've seen things with it. I mean, it's become part of not just the American fabric, but the cultural fabric. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, the fact that it's still on the air and we can, you know, discuss it, its quality has waned, dabbed and dab over time. But the fact that it's still on the air after 27 seasons is remarkable. The fact that, you know, it's gone through those iterations, the fact that it's lasted, you know, the only other show, animated show, that can kind of compare with its longevity would be South Park, which debuted, in 1997. So The Simpsons is 8 years older than South Park, and South Park is a little bit different because it tends to be a lot more topical. They have a much different production cycle. Mm-hmm. But The Simpsons, you know, I mean, it's important to kind of remember in historical context, you know, it went up against The Cosby Show. And so it debuted literally in an era of, it's a completely different era of television. And when it debuted, you know, it was one of the big things that helped break the Fox network. And it started, honestly, as a segment on a sketch show called The Tracy Ullman Show. And so Matt Groening drew some animated sequences that were aired during that show. And that show was funny, but was short-lived and didn't really gain an audience because the Fox network was not well known at the time. It was very small. It was just starting out. And so greenlighting that and turning it into a primetime series, you know, at a certain level, I mean, it helped build the Fox network, mm-hmm. without a doubt. Like that show, and I think Married with Children, are the two that really built Fox. But the Simpsons, Beverly Hills 90210 would be on that list too. Melrose Place, but you know, the X-Files, but the Simpsons built it, because it came on at a time and it was crass and it was funny and it was heartwarming. And it broke barriers, where kids loved it, adults liked it, college kids liked it. Some adults hated it because Bart Simpson was famously very rude. And it's hard to imagine, you know, 27 years later, the fact that we're having that, like, there were literally, you know, condemnations from, you know, like the first lady, Barbara Bush, condemned the Simpsons because she thought that they were rude. And, you know, schools banned Bart Simpson t-shirts because of things that he said. You know, like one of his catchphrases was, you know, I'm Bart Simpson, who the hell are you? And oh my God, the fact that a child would say hell, you know, was unconscionable. Cowabunga, dude, you know, like there were certain things, but the show became this immediate phenomenon and it became kind of a cultural touchstone for I think so many people. And it continued to endure and still does endure. You know, it's different now. It's obviously not as relevant as it once was, but I think it's weird to kind of think about how it's kind of become the archetypal, like, adult cartoon that kids mm-hmm. can enjoy. But when it first debuted, even though many of the storylines were still there, kids loved it. I mean, there was literally the merchandising around the show was so insane. I mean, I had Simpsons trading cards and action figures and t-shirts. And, you know, there was like I remember going to somebody's birthday party and probably when I was like in the third grade, and there were, you know, pencils and crayons, you know, literally anything you could merchandise, you would. And that was kind of a unique thing for a primetime series. You know, again, you saw that with Saturday morning cartoons, but not with a show that was written, you know, by a bunch of Harvard guys. And I think what's interesting about the show, if you watch it, you know, watch the whole thing, and one of the best things that's happened, I think, in kind of online television is the fact that FX now has a capsule of every episode of The Simpsons, barring the currently airing season, available to view through their app or through their website, The Simpsons World. And it's kind of amazing because you literally have the entire, you know,
body of work right there.
It's 500 plus episodes, maybe closer to 600. I don't even know how many episodes there are now. We're at your fingertips, and you have these moments, and people have cataloged them. The show, I think I wrote something about this for Mashable. No, actually I didn't. I should have written it, but I didn't have time when FX was doing this marathon of every Simpsons ever. And I live tweeted much of that, where basically I kind of had this argument that, like, the Simpsons, I think the reason it resonates on the internet so much is that it literally came of age the same time that the World Wide Web did. So it debuted in 1989. This is obviously a few years before the World Wide Web, but you certainly had colleges who were on, you know, online networks and online services. And kind of the rise of the show, kind of a lot of its glory years coincided with the early days of the web. And the two have been inextricably intertwined ever since. And so you have, I think that's a component to it too, which is it's one of the first television shows that really came of age with the internet. And that's actually kind of useful for one of the episodes we're going to be talking about, because it makes a lot of funny internet jokes, you know, funny circa 1998 worldview. But, you know, like, from the time that it debuted, you know, it was very popular on things like Usenet and CompuServe, and then eventually, you know, the World Wide Web. And it created this cultural conversation around the show that was bigger than just people in, you know, water coolers and offices, but it became a global conversation. And I think that it's the first show that ever did that. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's continued to endure, the fact that people are still creating tools around it. Something that was, I think it's called the Frinkulator. I'm going to find it. It's called the Frinkiac. And it is it has nearly 3 million Simpsons screen caps. And basically you can search for a quote or a character or a moment, and it's a search engine that will find screen caps of that episode of The Simpsons. Someone created this,
yes.
A couple of months ago. And it's fantastic. You know, you see GIFs or you see other screen grabs. I mean, the fact that there are so many archives and things dedicated to the show and people who are just obsessive about it, you're probably not going to find with anything else. But, you know, when we talked to Spencer a few weeks ago about Clarence, you know, it's funny because I think that you can see so much of even a show like Clarence, you can see so many of its roots in The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. The fact that there are jokes that are written for the adults, but that the core thing will still appeal to the kids. Mm-hmm. And then there's a message there. And I think ultimately that's what separates a show like The Simpsons from something like Family Guy, or again, South Park, or even to a lesser degree, from Matt Groening's other show, one of your favorites, Futurama, is that it's ultimately, it is a family show. Mm-hmm. It has social commentary and it has, you know, adult jokes, but it's a family show and it is kind of the ultimate family show. And if the first few seasons, especially, were much more rooted in that kind of, nuclear family sort of scenario, you know, you have the hardworking dad, not hardworking, excuse me, but you have the dad, the blue collar dad. And you have, you know, the stay-at-home mom and you have the kids and you have the things that are going on in the world. But if you look at especially the first two seasons, a lot of the plot lines are not demonstrably different from what you would see on other family sitcoms. It's just that it happens to be animated and they are inserted in this world, which is weird and funny. And you have these characters who have these one-liners, and they were really fortunate. They had some great, you know, some great writers and producers who worked on the show. You know, Conan O'Brien famously got his start on The Simpsons and wrote a number of episodes and was a staff writer and worked on it, I think, until the fourth season. And that's, I think, what's interesting about the show, too, is there are different eras of The Simpsons, and you'll have debates amongst Simpson fans of which era is the best. And the episode I chose for you to watch is from what I believe was their best era, Bill Weinstein, or the Bill Oakley, Josh Weinstein era of season 6, 7, and 8. Mm-hmm. Season 7 is my personal favorite. I think that it's kind of universally accepted that the best episode of the show is, I think it's from season 4, The Last Exit to Springfield, which is the episode for fans, if you're trying to place that one, was the dental plan, Lisa needs braces episode. It's just a truly great episode of television, really fantastic stuff. But for me, for my money, like, my favorite Simpsons are 6, 7, and 8, particularly season 7. But there are different eras of the show and different showrunners have given it different things. You know, David X. Cohen, who went on to be one of the co-creators of Futurama, you know, his time on the show was different than Oakley and Weinstein. The people, Mike Scully, who came after them, had a different, kind of take as well. And so it's interesting because it's been this living community. Plus, and then there's even the movie, you know, where there's all the stuff that's happened on the show and all this history that's been built into it. And yet after 27 seasons, they're still able to make new shows.
Yes, that's bizarre.
That's not to say that they have
mind blowing.
I mean, it's not to say there haven't been things that are derivative, because there certainly are. And that's not to say they haven't had tropes that they've kind of like rested their laurels on. One of them is kind of flash forwarding to the future. But the fact that, you know, the characters have all remained at the same age, which is an interesting challenge.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I want to touch on that you had mentioned, or rather two things, instead of Bart, who I'm sure she also had a problem with, my grandma could not stand, Homer. And the reason right. why is because she felt that it, gave the impression that, you know, a father should be like, is considered an idiot in the family and this and that and the other. So that's all, that was very interesting to me, hearing kind of the protests growing up of, you know, what was wrong with the show. But,
right.
you know, they take it and they kind of turn it up a few degrees, but for the most part, it's kind of realistic in the sense, at least of the time, where you do have these different kinds of characters that you can kind of relate to things in real life. And that's what I think is kind of cool about the show. And, speaking to, you know, it being, something that was insanely marketable and kind of worked for kids is, this was a little bit later, but still I can remember my favorite video game I've ever played was a video game where it was like Simpsons Racing or something like that. And it was basically
Grand Theft Auto for the Simpsons. It's a hit and run, Simpsons
yes.
Run, I think it was called.
I loved
One of the best
that.
Games ever.
I loved that game so much. That
it's
game was
fantastic
so fun.
Game. That game is so fun. And what's great about that game, and that game, the staff, the writers on The Simpsons actually worked on it. And you could tell because all the references in the game were dead on. And so you enjoyed the game, not even as someone who watched the show. You just enjoyed the game. But if you were a fan of the show, you would see all the little things they put in there. Like there was the casino that Mr. Burns had opened and then kind of went away. There was like, you know, the tire fire that's, there was, you know, boardwalk area. There were all these like places in Springfield that they'd worked on. There was also a follow-up game for, associated with like the Simpsons movie, which the writers also worked on it, and that had a really expansive world and it was okay. But for my money, there were a lot of bad Simpsons video games, but Simpsons Hit and Run, God, I want to play that now.
Right?
Like, I want to go back and play that now because it was so good.
It was, exactly. It was so much fun. I remember we would take turns, and we would all just, you know, sit around and watch the other person, the other sibling while they, you know, went and did this mission. And then we would all kind of like shout, no, you got to go that way. You got to go do that. And we would just all take turns and we'd each get, you know, like one mission that we could do. And we'd just rotate back and forth for hours and hours. We'd stop to go eat dinner and then we'd come back and play it some more. So much fun. Yeah, that is a,
so much
that's
fun.
A good game.
No, it's a great game. It's funny because I know that I think that it was one of those you could still play on your 360, like with the backward compatibility mode if you got like the Xbox version. But I wonder, like, how there it would be possible to play that game now. Like, I wonder if I'd have to like.
We had it on the GameCube, but that's what I.
Yeah, no, I, yeah, I remember it was on the GameCube. It was also on the PlayStation and on
Xbox.
The original Xbox. I actually remember hacking my original Xbox. And one of the cool things about that was you could download the games directly to the hard drive and play them off disk instead of having to play them off, you know, so it didn't have the delay, which in that game was significant because it was loading so much information.
Oh, yeah.
And the backgrounds were so textured. But yeah, no, I mean, Grand Theft Auto is one of my favorite game series ever, but Simpsons Hit and Run is like one of those things where it's just like, this game is the best. And the fact that you used the voice actors and everybody involved, like it was just, that's a superb game.
I loved playing Marge because her hair would go flying behind her as the car got, you know, drove along. It was a great game. But I suppose we should talk about these episodes that we we'll start with yours, Christina. You chose Das Bus. And afterward we'll be talking about our dear sweet Lisa the vegetarian.
Which I'm so excited about that. I can't wait to hear your thoughts on it. I'm really glad you watched that one. I know you watched both of them, but I'm really glad to hear you talk about it because I think that's one of the best episodes of the show's ever done.
It's very good.
I mean, it's funny. It's heartwarming. It has great use of guest stars. It's a tremendous episode. But we'll start out with Das Bus, which aired as the 14th episode of the 9th season. It originally aired on February 15th, 1998. And it's basically a big parody of Lord of the Flies. So the kind of the episode opens actually, though, I think in a very funny way, which is,
"Thou shalt build thyself an ark, measuring 300 cubits in length."
300 cubits, give or take.
Exactly 300.
Basically watching the Ten Commandments. And it's like, it's called, you know, Noah, played by Troy McClure. And Troy McClure, who was voiced by the late Phil Hartman, he's kind of the actor who always appears in Springfield, and he was like, "Oh, I'm Troy McClure. You may remember me from such other Bible epics as, you know," but he kind of was this B-movie actor who goes on to do infomercials, and he's played kind of had some major, plot roles throughout the series, until Mr. Hartman's, murder. He was a big part of the show. And, you know, his character is like, you know, God is talking to Noah and telling him, you know, like, take 300, take two of every creature. He was like, two creatures. He's like, two of every creature, God is saying, even the stink beetles. And God says, especially the stink beetles. And you know, the kids get really into this. And you know, one of my favorite lines is you know, Bart's like, "Whoa, cool, but God is so in your face." And Homer's like, "He's my favorite fictional character," which is so funny and biting. And you can even understand that even in 1998, I bet that the people in certain parts of the country were not happy with that.
Oh, I'm sure that would have been a line that was like, "They said what?" Oh, man.
and you know, Marge is trying to get the kids to go to bed and Lisa kind of citing the very funny thing for the Troy McClure fans. She's like, "Come on, Mom, you let us stay up late to watch Troy McClure and such other Bible epics as David versus Super Goliath and Suddenly's Last Supper." And Bart's like, "Yeah, way to cite precedent." And so she's like, "Okay, you can stay up late tonight, but tomorrow everybody's going to bed at 5. And so they all watch this movie. And of course, the kind of the joke is that it's you know, it's one of those, it's so long, is that it's the next morning and they're literally, the movie's just finished. She's like, "Oh, that was a long movie. You know, you all got to get up and go to school." And so they all kind of trudge off to school. And this is this is like a quintessential Simpsons trope, which is how the episode starts in a way that is completely unrelated and unlike anything else that comes after. It's just a really funny open that just ends up leading into a ridiculous situation.
Right. I kept wondering, so, like, how is their lack of sleep going to play into this?
Right. But there's not. It just means, you know, have to get them off to school. And of course, once the kids go to school, one of the reasons I chose this episode is because of the Model UN connection. I did Model UN in mm-hmm. high school and in college, and I'm a huge Model UN nerd. And this episode, I actually aired before I joined Model UN, but I remember showing this to my Model UN classmates and everyone getting a kick out of it. You know, but basically, you know, the kids said, okay, Devil Gets, you know, tomorrow you're leading for the statewide Model UN, so this is our last chance to bone up. You know, and the kids are making fun of Skinner for saying this. Skinner is the principal. He is a very not nerdish, but he's a very straight man. He's like the stereotypical like straight man. Like he's just not a lot of sense of humor, says things that people don't understand why it's funny. He doesn't get humor cues, but he and Bart are adversaries. And so he's going down, and you know, it's very important that everybody be ready for this Model UN. I should note that the episode has almost no bearing on what the actual Model UN is like. You know, I think there's a thing where,
what, you're telling me it's not like this?
Oh, you're not asked to show off a native dance or to ask questions about things. But, you know, Bart is, of course, representing Libya.
It's Muammar Gaddafi.
And he's like, okay, Libya, what are your exports? And he's like,
yes, sir, you American pig.
Nice touch.
let's see. The exports of Libya are numerous in amount. One thing they export is corn.
You see just some of the other things that the other kids are representing, like the Sherry and Terry. I don't remember where they're from. Ralph is from Canada.
Of course.
And he starts singing O Canada. Poor Milhouse is from Poland, and he's like, I know they sent a you know, rocket to the sun once at night. And it was really funny.
Yeah. Well, and to, I kept thinking, Bart, if you would apply yourself, you would be so good, because he was just speaking off the cuff and saying things perfectly, so that, I don't know, he just did a really good job of being convincing that he actually had things on the paper. Because at the end, he was like, Libya is a land of contrast. Thank you. And then he sits down and it's like, oh my gosh, you halfway convinced me that
He's especially when he's got like the turban and he's got the sunglasses on, and he's totally is selling the entire look, and you know, so they're getting ready to kind of go on this trip. And so, you know, Skinner's like, okay, remember, you're trusting me with our greatest national, you know, resource, the school bus. You know, it's not the kids, it's the school bus. And then we're gonna just continue with the A plot.
Yeah, good idea.
Basically, the kids get, rather than shifting to the secondary plot for a minute, basically, while they're on the bus to the Model UN, they start playing a game to see who can get their fruit from their bags, you know, down the fastest, down the school bus.
Yeah, they're basically racing their fruits against each other.
They're racing their fruits, so they're rolling apples and oranges and things like that, and Ralph has one of the typical Ralph lines, which is like, go orange, go, you know, apple, and Ralph is,
go banana!
A banana is not going to be able to move down the school bus. But Milhouse, as will become apparent throughout this episode, tends to kind of ruin everything, where he takes out a grapefruit. He's like, come on, grapefruit! You know, and he rolls down his grapefruit. Well, it rolls to the front of the bus, and it gets caught underneath the gas pedal. And as Otto, the stoner bus driver, is driving, he presses down on fruit, and it gets into his eyes, and great for being citrus, burns his eyes. It's like, oh, my eyes, you know, and the bus crashes and into water, and the kids are all kind of washed up on shore, and they're on this island where they don't know where they are, and they're all very hungry, and they don't have any supplies. And it very quickly becomes kind of a Lord of the Flies sort of situation, where, you know, they start to kind of work into groups. You know, this group will gather food. This group is going to build shelter. You know, this group is going to kind of do other things. And it very quickly, you know, kind of devolves into the kids not really being able to do, like,
right. They don't have survival skills there.
They don't have survival skills. You know, like, Bart has this fantasy of building a great hut that will be staffed by monkey butlers who will bring them wine and do all kinds of things, and that just doesn't work out. You know, they're trying to find fruits that aren't poisonous, and you know, Ralph eats some of the berries, and again, one of my favorite lines, he's like, you know, it tastes like burning, where he's eating these kind of poisonous berries. But it turns out there has been some food that Bart was able to kind of go into the bus and pull out a cooler, and some of the kids are able to kind of go around, and Lisa's been very cogent about making them all ration the food that they have. The kids go around the campfire and talk about how hungry they are. Sherry and Terry, one of them says, "I'm so hungry I could eat at Arby's." And the kids are immediately like, "Oh my God, I am. You must really be hungry. Oh God, she really is hungry." which I think is one of the greatest bits in the history of the show. In fact, I tweeted that last week.
Oh really?
And Arby's favorited it. It was just apropos of nothing. But I was like, I'm so hungry, I could eat at Arby's. The truth of the matter is, I actually enjoy Arby's, and I quite miss it in New York. But it's just one of those really funny lines. I'm so hungry, I could eat at Arby's, and that's probably something in my personal life that I've said over the last, I guess, you know, what is this, 18 years now since the show aired, that I've probably said, you know, hundreds of times. Right. It's just one of those catchphrases I've said, but it was just one of those moments. But anyway, you know, it turns out Bart's able to bring them some food. They're trying to ration it to last as long as they should. But it turns out the food has been stolen and someone has eaten it. And they all start to kind of go after one another, like who's responsible. And again, this becomes kind of a Lord of the Flies situation where they're kind of going for a hunt. And it turns out, you know, they're accusing, you know, Milhouse of eating the food and he has, in fact, stolen some of the food. And Lisa and Bart kind of become his protectors, where they feel like there should be a court of law, just like in the UN, where he should be given, like, a hearing. And he, you know, Milhouse claims his innocence, says, "I didn't eat it, a monster ate it." And everybody's like, you know, monsters don't exist. And there's a funny moment where Bart says, "I think we can all agree this is not the proper venue to discuss the existence of monsters." You know, it does turn out Milhouse did eat some of the food, but he didn't eat all of it.
Right. And he does have nacho cheese breath.
He's like, "All I ate was two sandwiches and a bag of Doritos," you know. But so he did eat some of the food, but he didn't eat all of it. And so they're asking, you know, they're trying to kind of figure out what happened. And they find this boar that kind of comes upon them. You know, it looks like the kids are all about to attack Milhouse. Lisa and Bart are protecting him. And all of a sudden, this boar comes out of nowhere.
He's got like chips on his
He's got chips on his snout, and so they realize, okay, the boar really did eat him. And so at this point, Lisa, who is a vegetarian, as we will discuss in our next episode, discusses the fact that
if a boar can survive here, there must be a source of food. Look, he's licking the slime off that rock. That's what he's been eating, slime. And there's enough slime for all of us. We're saved.
Cut to a shot of, you know, the boar being spit roasted, because, you know, it's like, oh, this slime has made this boar remarkably tender. You know, the kids she's the only one who's you know, licking slime off of rocks. The rest of them are enjoying the boar.
Which, good for them that they were able to capture and cook a boar. That's fantastic.
Completely. During this point of time, Otto has been rescued, but he's simply been captured by a Chinese offshore fishing rig and told to become a slave. So he's out of commission.
Poor Otto.
And as the episode comes to a close, the voice, I believe it's James Earl Jones, says, "Okay, you know, and the children learn to work together until someone rescued them. Oh, let's say Mo." And they just kind of wrap up the episode there.
Much like the Deus Ex Machina moment in The Lord of the Flies.
Completely, completely. I mean, that's the whole thing. This is such a on the nose Lord of the Flies parody into every way. And in fact, kind of at the end, it's like, oh, and this is just okay. And it got resolved and we see it off screen.
Right.
And so that's the A plot, and it's very funny, and I think that it has some good moments. But the secondary plot is I think one of the best kind of like secondary B plots that's ever happened on The Simpsons, which is Homer decides to become rich, by building his own internet company.
"I'm setting up a home office for my new business enterprise."
"What business enterprise?"
"Ever heard of a little thing called the internet?"
Right. I mean, everybody was getting into this internet thing and, you know, making money. So why not Homer?
Completely. Well, you have to understand, again, kind of the context for this is that this happened in 1998. So this episode was written in 97 and this aired in 98. And so the internet was just becoming really hard, really hot, really big. And, you know, Homer finds out from his neighbor that he basically gets a weird letter in his mailbox, like bill, you know, mortgage, ooh, second notice. You know, he's dropping things down the drain. So he basically says, you know, he finds this thing from Flancrest Enterprises, and he's like, "Oh, that's from my home business." And he's like, "You liar! You don't have a home business. Why would you make up a lie like that, liar?" He's like, "Oh no, you know, Maude and I sell religious book rugs over the internet." And Homer's immediately very impressed. "Ooh, internet, eh?" He's like, "Yes, indeed. He's making some good scratch, too." "Scratch, eh?" "Yep. Maude, eh?" Because kind of the joke until they kill off Maude Flanders is that Homer always thinks she's attractive. And so he's decided that he's going to set up a new home business, and he makes sure that he has things on his desk, a typewriter, a drinking bird toy, some office supplies, a family portrait that he takes off the wall. He has a, you know, butter, a dish to hold his pencils. He's like, oh yeah, everybody's making money off the internet except us. We've fallen behind, way behind. And so, you know, he decides to start, you know, creating memos. Now, at this point, Homer is not aware that anything about the internet, which is part of what makes this so great. He's like, okay, what am I going to call my internet company? All the good names are taken. And Marge is starting to say, well, what does your company do? And he's like, oh, you know, the industry moves so fast, it's really hard to tell. That's why I need a name that's cutting edge, like Cutco, Edgecom, InterSlice. And so she's like, how about CompuGlobal Hyper MegaNet? He's like, okay, fine, whatever. If you Google, you know, CompuGlobal Hyper MegaNet, I think people have actually created businesses named that episode, which is great. And, he's like, CompuGlobal Hyper MegaNet, Junior Vice President Homer J. Simpson speaking. And, you know, he starts to kind of learn about this. There's a sight gag where he's, learning about the internet, where he's reading a book called Internet for Dummies, Remedial Edition. And, he says, oh, the internet's on computers these days. Ooh, the internet's on computers now.
Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
I'm interested in upgrading my 28.8 kilobaud internet connection to a 1.5 megabit fiber optic T1 line. Will you be able to provide an IP router that's compatible with my token ring Ethernet LAN configuration?
And Homer stares back at him. He's like, what? He's like, can I have money now? Because he's just completely confused. You know, he's somehow managed to buy online ads, which even in 1998 was kind of a new thing. But yet he still doesn't have a computer. In fact, the family won't get a computer, I don't think, for another season. And is just completely confused. And is just very clearly, you know, out of his league about this stuff.
Right.
But suddenly, you know, after this, Bill Gates, who you have to again remember the timing on this was during the height of the Department of Justice case against Microsoft, and Microsoft was like the biggest company in the world. We think Apple's so powerful right now, like they were even bigger than Apple, like in terms, I think, of how everybody saw computers. Mm-hmm. Like they just there wasn't a Google, so you know there wasn't like these secondary companies. It was one big tech company, and that was Microsoft. Mm-hmm. And you know, Bill Gates was kind of seen as evil for a lot of people. This is before he became a great humanitarian. So he's like, oh, you know, Homer, Bill Gates is here. And he's like, Bill Gates, millionaire computer nerd Bill Gates. He's like, oh my God, get out of sight, Marge. I don't want to look like this to look like a two-bit operation. So Bill Gates comes in with his cronies, and he's like, you don't look rich. And he's like, don't let the haircut fool you. I'm extraordinarily, you know, wealthy. He's like, your internet address was brought to my attention, but I can't figure out what, if anything, CompuGlobal Hyper MegaNet does. So rather than risk competing with you, I've decided to simply buy you out. And that's a funny line for a number of reasons. One, it's actually kind of prescient because, again, this episode aired in early 1998. So right before we kind of had like the heat of like the dot-com kind of race that was kind of happening. Mm-hmm. But this was exactly actually what would happen, where you would have no idea what any of these companies did, but bigger companies would buy them out. And Microsoft did this all the time, where they would literally just buy small companies and like, I don't know what you do, but I don't want to compete with you, so I'm just going to buy you out. And so, you know, Homer and Marge are trying to kind of, you know, discuss like how can they, you know, get the most money out of this. He's like, I accept your proposal. And he's like, well, everybody always does. And, you know, ask him to buy them out. And instead of getting a check, he trashes his office, including breaking bird that would sip from water.
Yeah, buying out is a totally different thing than what he thought.
It's a completely different thing. And thus, you know, Homer's internet dreams are completely crushed. And we don't see them get a computer for, again, I think it might be later that same season, but I think it's the next season where they finally get a computer and they start to go online for different things. But this was notable for me because it was one of the first times where they actually kind of address technology this way on The Simpsons, and kind of one of the running gags throughout the series is Homer's kind of ineptness with this stuff. Although at various times at one point he becomes a blogger, a food blogger, and at various other times he became like, I think, a gossip columnist, and he's done other things. And, you know, they've had run-ins with the Mapple store, which is their version of the Apple store and things like that. And he certainly like has his MyPhone. This was, you know, the, the first, I think, cartoon representation of Bill Gates. It was not voiced by Bill Gates. Needless to say, that was not a Bill Gates approved parody message, but a very funny one. And it's funny to think, to see how Bill Gates is represented on the show
exactly
in 1998 versus where probably how he would be, you know, portrayed now. Because 18 years ago, he was kind of the incarnate. He was this evil nerd,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that was kind of the MO behind him. You know, the film, The High Risk of Silicon Valley had come out, which had introduced a lot of people in the broader public to kind of who he was and the Microsoft story. And that, of course, focused on kind of his battle with Steve Jobs. And Steve Jobs was not really in 1998. He was starting to become Steve Jobs again, but this episode aired before the iMac was even introduced. And so, you know, again, I mean, like, he literally was like the king of the world and of the internet world, but he also was kind of seen as this very calculating kind of, you know, nerd evil genius. And so the fact that he's not shown to be benevolent at all is very funny when you consider that 18 years later, you know, he's one of the biggest philanthropists we have in the world. He's still the richest man and gives, you know, has helped eradicate malaria and do all kinds of incredible things. It's sort of funny. And the, you know, not only is he not at Microsoft anymore, but his successor as CEO isn't at Microsoft anymore. It's weird to think about how much has changed in technology terms.
It really is. And that was kind of one of the striking things of this B plot was, you know, me seeing Bill Gates portrayed in this way. It's like, this isn't the Bill Gates that I know. And of course, whenever you put it in its time, then it makes sense. But just kind of like imagining Bill Gates looking back now and just kind of chuckling or maybe crying because he was on top.
Totally. But somebody like me who was, you know, I was like 15 when this episode aired. And you were like five, right? I can't even imagine, you know. So, you know, you as somebody who's in your early 20s who has come of age seeing Bill Gates is a very different figure than I have. Mm-hmm. And then we have people who might, through reruns and other things, you know, if they're 10 or 11 or 12 watching the episode now, we'll see it from a completely different perspective too. And I think that's what's interesting about the episode. It's funny because to me, the B plot, you know, with the Microsoft thing is one of the funniest and most enduring, one of my favorites in Simpsons history. But it's also probably one of those that holds up the least well, unless you have memories of that event.
Right. Yeah. Someone today, like, you know, my youngest brother or something, if he were to watch this, he'd have absolutely no idea. I at least remember that, you know, at one point, Bill Gates was on top and, Microsoft was the biggest company, but yeah.
Right.
That's
funny. Right. And you can at least be kind of aware of that and you remember, right. But if you have those memories, you can kind of get the jokes. If you remember that time, it's still funny, but it's one of those things that does not hold up, you know, for a newcomer. Whereas I think the A plot line of, you know, the Lord of the Flies thing is a lot more timeless.
Oh, for sure.
And that's still funny. Kind of the mob rule stuff happening between the kids is still potent and notable. You know, those jokes, even I'm so hungry I could eat at Arby's, is still hilarious.
Well, I mean, it's even more funny today because Arby's is kind of slowly but surely disappearing too.
Completely. So even then, I'm not sure how well known it was outside of certain things. You know, it's just kind of one of those. But yeah, you're right. It becomes like even today, it's almost even funnier in the sense that everybody cares so much about Chipotle and like healthy eating and like, you know, having like fast food that is not, you know, fast food, you know, kind of the whole slow food movement, that sort of thing. That having that kind of commentary is even funnier. And also, frankly, anytime you're making jokes at the UN's expense, that's never not funny. And I don't think we'll ever reach a place where that doesn't land. So it's interesting. I like this episode. And I wish I could say I'd planned this when we went to talk about it, but I hadn't. I just remembered how much I enjoyed it. And honestly, I think what it was too is that I'd made the I'm so hungry I could eat an Arby's joke on Twitter and kind of wanted to talk about it. But it was one of those things, you know, like, that storyline, you could air that today and it would still work completely.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we've got, you know, some people argue too that the end of Star Wars, the of the newest Star Wars has a bit of a Deus Ex Machina moment where R2-D2 wakes up and then shows them the way to Luke. And so, you know, it's not exactly the same, but I mean, that can be drawn, you know what I mean? So there are lots of things in here that make sense. And
yeah, totally. But also I think just the fact that they're, you know, parodying Lord of the Flies,
exactly.
Which kids are going to be reading Lord of the Flies forever. Like you read that book in seventh grade.
Yep.
Like you read that in Animal Farm, like that's what you do. Like, and that's going to be the case forever, right? Mm-hmm. Like that book will always be taught. So what did you think of Das Bus?
I liked the B plot, and I thought it was funny. And it was kind of like a relief. It was kind of a chuckle on the side of the A plot, which was, it got a little dark, you know, and then
yeah.
I was like, whoa, now.
Especially when they're like about to, they're about to kill Milhouse.
Yes, because Bart and Lisa kind of got turned against, you know what I mean? People were against them suddenly too. And I was like, oh my gosh, no, everyone's against everyone now. So yeah, it got dark. And it was like, can we go back to the funny part where Bill Gates is destroying the house, you know, where Bill Gates' goons are destroying the house? So yeah, this was a good one though. I mean, I really enjoyed it, and it shows, I think, just like, I don't know. It's, even though it's based on a movie in the sense that, you know, it's based on Lord of the Flies, it's still like taking something which could just be, I don't know, a regular story about a family or something, and like literally throwing it off the bridge and going somewhere else with it. So I kind of like that it's the premise gets thrown so far away, and we can still see how these characters will act in these different areas. So I liked it. I think that it was a fun one.
Yeah.
And then you asked me to watch Lisa the Vegetarian, where Lisa becomes a vegetarian. So with this one, I think it tied in a little bit more at the beginning, which I actually wasn't expecting.
Yes, it did.
You know what I mean? Usually I'm used to, you watch The Simpsons and something happens at the beginning that just like barely links, as we talked about with Das Bus. But here, they're at like a carnival slash a fair slash a theme park. It's kind of got all the different.
Yeah, it's called Storytown Village. And actually I think that was even referenced in The Simpsons Hit and Run game. I think they actually, there's a moment where that's there.
That's probably, yeah.
I think I might be wrong, it's kind of like you said, it's kind of like a petting zoo sort of place slash like puppet theater place.
Yeah. It's really meant for not so much for the older kids, or for Maggie and,
for Maggie. And in March, I think she even points out, she's like, you know, we want to do something Maggie can enjoy. And you know, because, you know, they are always doing something the other kids want, and this is something for Maggie, and so she gets very excited. You know, Maggie loves the animals.
Yeah,
so it turns out everybody has a great time.
Exactly. Yeah, they go there, and you know, they're all worried at first that it's not going to be a good time, but I love this part because they come across some sheep, and so they're kind of like looking at the sheep, and the camera, you know, is full screen. There's a sheep, and then they go.
Out of the way, you.
And yeah, you know, they all are just kind of in love with this little sheep.
And but it's so cute.
It's so cute. And that awakens something inside Lisa, right?
Yes, yes. So, you know, they're looking at that lamb, and then suddenly you hear over the intercom that the following cars have been broken into, which
right?
I get the impression that was like a thing, that was, you know, you go to a fair and a regular thing is where you hear over the intercom that people's cars get broken into. I don't know.
I think that was just probably more of a kind of a making fun of the fact that you think you're at this family like friendly place and everything should be fine.
That makes sense. Okay.
But it does get very funny where, you know, when they drive back, the back window
is completely broken,
smashed out.
Oh dear. So they go inside and it's finally time to eat dinner. And, you know, they're all sitting around the table eating dinner. And, somebody mentions that what's on the plate are lamb chops. And I'm like, oh dear, I know where this is going. So, basically, you know, Lisa is about to take a bite, and then she realizes that, what she's about to put in her mouth is baby lamb. And so she's like, I can't eat this. There's no way I can eat this. And so Homer starts
to. She even sees a lamb.
Yeah, she sees a lamb.
She sees a lamb. Like, she's like,
please, Lisa, I thought you loved me.
It's hilarious. I love the hot dog part because she sees like a daydream with what a hot dog is made of. It's like a possum tail. And that was good. I was like, yeah, that's pretty much what hot dogs are. But she's, you know, she can't eat it because how can she love a baby lamb that kissed her face and then also eat lamb? And I like Homer's line, which was, Lisa, get a hold of yourself. This is lamb, not a lamb.
Right. Right, exactly. And it's funny too. She's like, wait a minute. You know, Lisa, honey, are you saying you're never going to eat any animal again? She's like, what about bacon? No. Ham? No. Pork chops? Dad, those are all come from the same animal. He's like, yeah, right, Lisa. A wonderful, magical animal.
Yes, Homer, a pig, which, yeah, that's hilarious. Oh, dear. So we realize that her moral obligations suggest that she won't be able to eat meat because she's a vegetarian, and doggone it, she can't eat something that she cares about. So she's hanging out with Bart on the couch, watching the Itchy and Scratchy show, which, of course, is a parody of Tom and Jerry. The mouse like comes in and feeds the cat, and it turns out that the cat is being fed its own stomach.
Right.
And it ends up like which is gross. It cuts into its stomach.
It's very funny. It does, but this was one of the best Itchy and Scratchy gags where like he keeps eating his stomach and keeps regurgitating and trying to eat the piece over and over again.
Falls
and
right
she
out.
Says something like, I never realized before, but some Itchy and Scratchy cartoons send the message that violence against animals is funny.
Yes.
And like, what?
Well, and then he says something about cartoons and how that's ridiculous. Cartoons aren't supposed to have a message. That's just about cartoons getting hurt or something like that. And then, of course, Homer comes in the door and like bangs Bart against the back of the door on accident. And so we break the fourth wall a little bit and acknowledge the fact that we are a cartoon as well, which was funny.
Which is funny. There was also, I think, a bit before this where she's at school and she's having to kind of struggle with dissecting a worm.
Oh,
And so an independent thought alarm is kind of put off. And then she's told to watch, you know, this episode about, you know, a film showing how, like, you know, a cow goes from, you know, the farm to your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
It all starts here in the high-density feedlot. Then when the cattle are just right... It's time for them to graduate from Bovine University.
And, you know, Ralph has one of his great lines where he's like, when I grow up, I want to go to Bovine University.
That poor kid, he goes through the factory that's processing the cows and he comes out and he's like almost pale as a ghost. And suddenly he like snaps out of it because he's an actor in the show.
He's an actor and he's eating. He also, you know, she's told that like, you know, they need to have a... vegetarian menu at school and whatnot, and Doris, you know, is like, excuse me, do you have anything here that doesn't have meat? She's like, well, possibly the meatloaf. And she's like, I believe you're required to provide a vegetarian alternative. And you know,
they hit the independent thought alarm again too.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, two independent thought alarms in one day. The students are overstimulated. Billy, remove all the colored chalk from the classrooms. And Billy's like, I warned you, didn't I warn you? The colored chalk was forged by Lucifer himself.
Oh dear, I love that, the independent thought alarm. And I'd like to think that that's probably something that exists at a lot of schools.
Yeah, completely. Well, but because of this, they have to, like, again, sorry, I got ahead of myself. They have to watch this film put on by the Meat Council, and it's actually called The Meat Council Presents Meat and You, Partners in Freedom. Basically, yeah, as you said, it kind of goes through the whole process of how, you know, meat is, how, you know, cattle is raised and then destroyed and you know, processed. And,
right.
And then at the end of it, she's like, come on, I can't believe you're asking us to you know, swallow this tripe. And she's like, oh, there's some tripe here.
That was a great moment. And the kids all run up and start eating the tripe, and she's not having any of it. She doesn't want to eat meat, and she doesn't think that other people should either. Fast forward, and we are Homer's putting on a barbecue, because the whole thing with this is that, again, he's kind of competing with Flanders, and Flanders had just done a family reunion event, and Homer's like, why didn't you invite me to the family reunion?
He's like, oh, which is hilarious. Flanders is fair. He's like, well, you know, like Homer wouldn't have shown up anyway, but he feels bad but he's upset that he's not invited.
He didn't get an invite. So he's like, I'm just going to put on a better party and, you know, show Mr.
And
Flanders.
And he's like, I only can invite the people I want. And Flanders is like, oh, can I come? He's like, sure. And he's like, Joe.
So he decides that he's going to put on a barbecue, and it's funny because there's like this little it's a pig invite, and on it says like Homer's barbecue, but it's got like extra bees, and I can't remember exactly how this whole bit goes, but we'll definitely drop it in here.
Come to Homer's BBBQ. The extra B is for BYOBB.
What's that extra B for?
That's a typo.
So I laughed aloud whenever Barney shows up to the barbecue, and Homer's like, oh, you brought a keg. That's so great, Barney. And Barney asks Homer where he can fill up the keg. Right. So he brought an empty beer keg to the party, which is just friggin' hilarious. So they're all out, and oh my gosh, another funny, hilarious bit with no sound or with no talking is and I can like totally relate to this. You know how you're trying to fill up your or you're trying to light your coals so you can make food on the barbecue? Well, oftentimes you have to use lighter fluid. So it's this bit where Homer is just sitting in front of the grill, just squirting so much lighter fluid into the grill, and then he keeps squirting and then spraying and squirting and spraying. And then he gets done with that. And he takes out another bottle and squirts it in there too. And the best part, which is like the totally true part, is then he lights a match and throws it on and it just like barely lights, which is...
It barely lights. It's like, ooh, good. No, that's so funny. And even the sound they used for that, like they must have actually taken like a thing of lighter fluid and sprayed it on the Vagunda Girl because it sounded perfect. It's like one of the most realistic sound effects. You're like, yep, that's totally what it sounds like when you use one of those things on the grill.
Yes.
But no, you know, they're you know, he's creating, you know, meat for everybody, you know, here's you know, all this food and kind of showing it off, you know, here's a Whopper for the copper, you know, and everybody's really enjoying the barbecue.
Yes, except Lisa, who's upstairs complaining because, you know, they can have their barbecue, but they don't have to rub it in my face. Cue the moment where a piece of burger slaps her in the face because Homer was trying to flip it into Bart's plate and he accidentally flipped it too high and it landed on Marge's face. Or landed on Lisa's face. So she's very upset at this point. And, you know, we cut back to the barbecue and Homer's like trying to show off his final creation, which is this great, you know, roasted up pig with an apple in its mouth. And, you know, it's going to be delicious. And they're all excited about it. But since he upset Lisa, she comes downstairs and she takes the lawnmower and she runs into the grill with the lawnmower and starts to push the pig away. And my favorite part of this is that Marge shouts out like, "You better stop it, Bart," or something like that. Like, "Doggone it, Bart." And then Bart's standing right beside her.
He's like, "What? I'm right here." He's like, "Oh, I'm sorry." You know, it's just, you know, habit.
So good.
And so she destroys, you know, this pig and it goes off and Homer is now very, very upset because he sees his pig flying. He's like, "Oh, it's just a little, you know, slimy. It's still good. It's still good. It was just a little dirty. It's still good. It's still good." He's trying to hold out hope and then it blasts into the air. "Oh, it's just a little airborne. It's still good. It's still good."
And
Bart goes, it's gone, Dan. "I know." and then you immediately cut to a scene inside the power plant where Mr. Burns and Skinner are. And Skinner says, you know, Mr. Burns says, "You know, Skinner, I'd like to give, you know, $1 million to charity."
"You know, Smithers, I think I'll donate $1 million to the local orphanage. When pigs fly."
"Will you be donating that $1 million now, sir?"
"No, I'd still prefer not."
Which is fantastic as well.
We also missed one very funny line. As they were preparing for the barbecue, Homer was talking about everything they need to make and Lisa was asking about salad. And they start a conga line of "You don't win friends with salad," which if you're one of my friends, you that was something we sang to one another all the time in middle school and high school. "You don't win friends with salad. Hey, you don't win friends with salad." And even Marge gets in on it and she's like, she's not trying to take sides, but she's like, "I just saw the conga line, you know."
Right. She's so upset that it seemed as if Marge was taking sides, but she wasn't.
It's a good conga line and it's a good chant. I mean, and look, let's be very real here. No matter what side of I respect people who are vegans and vegetarians, but the truth is you do not win friends with salad.
It's true. Well, you can win. So you don't. To be fair, listeners, you can win me with salad. I love salad, but you don't win most friends with salad. That's true.
You know what? It would have to be one hell of a salad. And even then, like, you don't. You know, you don't.
You could win me faster with like a glass of wine than a salad. So, yeah.
This is my point. This is my point, Mikey. Even if you enjoy salad, and I enjoy a good salad, too. You don't win friends with salad.
Like the Simpsons is gospel. You're right.
It really is.
It's fair. Yeah. So that happens. And you know, we see her. Or this is actually my favorite part, I think, of the whole episode, is her at the dinner table. Well, rather them all at the dinner table, because I think we can all kind of relate to this passive aggressive moment.
Yes.
Among family members. And so it's the whole blah, blah, blah. "Will you tell blah, blah, blah that I need this to happen?" And everyone's kind of sitting together.
"Marge, Since I'm not talking to Lisa, would you please ask her to pass me the syrup?
Please pass your father the syrup, Lisa.
It's just hilarious because it ends up that Homer kind of gets confused and he ends up getting...
So he ends up asking Lisa
to talk to the
directly.
Mom, to talk to Marge, which is just so funny because the whole point, of course, is that he not talk to Lisa.
But they're very much fighting over this sort of thing because, you know, he's very hurt that she's ruined his big barbecue moment and she's hurt that he's not respecting her beliefs in what to eat.
Right. And so... You know, Lisa is done. You know, she's sick of this. She's tired of living in a household with this carnivore, and she's just not going to put up with it. So she leaves the house in a fit of rage, and she starts walking around, and she realizes that the whole world is filled with meat. Everywhere she turns, there's meat. There's meat in the store. There's meat in the fridge. There's meat on the floor. Meat with in a train and meat. No. There's meat everywhere. So she goes to the Quickie Mart, and while she's there, she sees like hot dogs or whatever, 8 for $1 or something ridiculous that is totally gas station hot dog prices, which is hilarious. And she's like, fine, if the world wants me to eat meat, then I'll do it. So, you know, she kind of like readies herself to take a bite of this hot dog. And I thought she wasn't going to do it, but then she bites into the hot dog. And we think there for a moment that she forsook her beliefs,
her principles.
Yeah. And she, you know, she fell to the worldly, troubles that is eating meat, until Apu tells her that it's not meat, it's tofu. So
right.
A long time ago, apparently, he changed out the possum tail hot dogs for tofu hot dogs,
right.
And no one's noticed.
And no one noticed.
And of course, a trope is that all Indian people are vegetarians, but definitely Apu is vegetarian. And so he was like, yeah, you know, I'm a vegetarian. And he shows this shirt do you remember what the shirt says? It's escaping.
It says, don't have a cow man.
Don't have a cow man.
Which is very funny because that, of course, was one of the most famous Bart Simpson lines from the early episodes of the series. And now, you know, it makes sense in this case on two levels, you know, because both are Hindu beliefs about, you know, the sacredness of cows, and also, you know, anti, you know, eating meat. So it's very funny.
Yes. And you know, he kind of teaches Lisa the ways of the vegetarian, or you know, is kind of trying to show her that it's cool to be a vegetarian. And so after, you know, they talk about it a little bit, he invites her to come check something out, and they walk over to
the light beer case.
It's the non-alcoholic beer.
That's what it is, the non-alcoholic beer. He's like, what happens if anyone ever wants a non-alcoholic beer? You know, it's never come up.
Which is hilarious. And the reason why I found this especially
inaccurate
is because, right, it is exactly accurate. I went to, when I was a kid, I was at a baseball stadium, if that's what it's called. Anyway, I was at a baseball place where you go and you watch baseball.
Yeah, baseball stadium. It's called a stadium.
Okay, cool. And I went up to, like, with my dad to the concession stand, and I saw non-alcoholic beer on the menu. And, you know, as a kid, you're curious and you're like, oh man, you know, my parents get to drink alcohol if they want to, but I don't, blah, 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 whatever. And I saw non-alcoholic beer and I was like, does that really mean there's no alcohol in it? And my dad was like, yeah. And I said, can I have some? And he said, no. And so I had to have a little chuckle as I remembered that moment. And, you know, if I went into Apu's store, you know, he might have his first moment where someone asked him about the non-alcoholic beer. But anyway,
Before we exit on that real quick, just a funny aside, there was a CD-ROM game for The Simpsons called Virtual Springfield.
Uh-huh.
And, hidden as an Easter egg in that it was basically just kind of a click through sort of game where you'd click through different, you know, kind of animated parts of the show. And there were little Easter eggs and different things you could find. And one of the things was actually, if you went into Apu's, if you went to the Quickie Mart and you clicked on the non-alcoholic beer, place, it would actually take you someplace very special.
Nice. That's awesome. So what happened is he opens up the non-alcoholic beer door and there are stairs leading up to something. And they get to the top of the stairs and it's this beautiful, almost Garden of Eden-like zone.
Completely. It's this great rooftop garden. And then that actually is what is there on the in Virtual Springfield, is that's how you can get to the rooftop garden, is by going through the non-alcoholic beer case.
Nice. And the funny thing is, too, along with this beautiful garden, is a way for him to watch all of the drive-in movies for free.
Yes.
The roof overlooks the drive-in movie theater, so he can see them all for free. Now, I don't know about audio, but anyway, that's beside the point.
Right, that's beside the point. I mean, I think at that point already drive-ins had kind of gone to where you would just tune into a radio station to hear the noise, so maybe you'd be close enough. Who knows?
That's true. Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. Regardless, he can see the movie. He can see the action for free.
Right. And the more important thing, Christina, would you like to tell us who we meet in this rooftop garden?
Is that he's not alone. He's actually joined by Paul and Linda McCartney. Paul and Linda McCartney. And so this is stunt casting at its best, I think. The Simpsons is notorious for stunt casting, where they'll cast famous people to play themselves. Probably one of their biggest coups ever was they had Michael Jackson voice himself, although he wouldn't be credited as Michael Jackson, and the character he was playing was not actually himself. It was someone who thought he was Michael Jackson, but was really just kind of crazy. They've had basically there are fewer celebrities, I think, who haven't been on The Simpsons than who have. But this, certainly in 1995 in season 7, was, I think, one of the biggest ones they got. And so they had Paul and his wife, Linda, who now sadly has passed away, are on to kind of talk about things, because they're both vegetarians and they kind of share, you know, their thoughts about vegetarianism and why, you know, Linda has started her own kind of line of vegetarian friendly, you know, food dinners.
We weren't satisfied with the other vegetarian meals on the market. You'd be surprised how often you'd find a big hunk of pork in them.
Ew.
Linda and I both feel strongly about animal rights.
They give her some encouraging advice for how to deal with being a vegetarian. There's also a very funny moment where Paul says that, you know, if you listen to Maybe I'm Amazed Backwards, there's a great recipe for a lentil soup. Keep that in mind, because that's actually a really funny Easter egg at the end of the episode. And that, of course, is also kind of a reference to the fact that if you listen to, I think it was the song Get Out, but I can't recall, but there's a certain Beatles song where apparently if you listen to it backwards, there was a hidden message that said Paul is dead, and people like spread the word that Paul was actually dead. But it's kind of a great moment where they have
well, it's essentially a message for Lisa that, yeah. Because Apu makes a point that, you know, there's no reason to force anything down other people's throats, which is also kind of funny with, you know, the beliefs of Beatles members, and then also of the writers of the show, I think, where we don't even just have to talk about vegetarianism, but I mean religion in general and all of these things. It seems like that's kind of the message, where he's like, you know, you can believe in what you believe in, but there's no reason that you need to pester everyone else about it. And she's realizing, you know, I can accept my dad as a meat eater and still be a vegetarian myself, and everything's fine.
Exactly.
We can live together in harmony.
Right. And also she can understand that her own self-righteousness doesn't have to end up, you know, impeding on everybody else. Like, she can have her beliefs and respect that, but she, you know, but freedom comes both ways, right? Like, you have freedom to do what you want, but you don't have the freedom to impose what you want on others.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that was a really good message, and I wasn't necessarily expecting that. I was expecting a continually funny thing and not necessarily a nice message. So I was happy to have that at the end, actually.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because, you know, they have things like, oh, would you like to hear a song? And Apu starts singing, you know, Sergeant Pepper with them. And she gets a little weirded out. She's like, I'm going
to
go.
I need to back out of here.
Yeah. After she leaves, you know, she's walking home, and Homer is now at this point looking for her. He's literally like screaming inside a baby carriage. He's like, Lisa, where are you? He's like, Lisa. He's like, I was looking for you. He's like, you know, I would apologize. He's like, I don't know what for, but it was my fault. And she's like, actually, you know, it was my, I was wrong this time. And he's like, ooh hoo, and he's just like, chew. And she says, you know, while I was gone, I got really good advice from Paul and Linda McCartney. And he's like, is there anything rock stars can't do? And She's like, I still stand by my beliefs, but I can't defend what I did. And I'm sorry if I messed up your barbecue. And he's like, you know, I used to believe in things when I was your age, too,
yes.
Which is both hilarious and sad.
Right. I don't know. It was a funny moment. And then he offers to give her a piggyback ride. And then he realizes what he said and he corrects himself.
And gives her a veggie back ride. And I love this. There are a number of episodes, namely also from season six, Lisa's wedding. There's some things where like, there's some really great, Homer and Lisa moments. And this is one of those where, throughout the course of the series, you know, Bart and Homer tended to kind of have sucked a lot of the energy out of the show and not out of the show, but have kind of, you know, become like the focal point in a lot of ways and their relationship and kind of antagonism and the fact that they either, you know, at odds with one another or are conspirators with one another has played off each other quite well. But one of the things I think the show does really well throughout its run is about the kind of the emotional relationship between Homer and Lisa, because, you know, she is so much smarter than him on every level, and he knows that. And but yet they still have really good episodes where they manage to connect. There's an episode with Lisa's sax where you kind of hear the story of how, you know, she got her saxophone, and there are moments, you know, this episode again, you know, Lisa's wedding, where you kind of see the father-daughter relationship and how much they care about one another. And it's really sweet, I think, what he does, you know, because he's willing to concede that he's wrong, even though in this case he wasn't.
Which,
you know,
is
maybe
so
he
sweet.
Said some things, you know, which maybe he said some things that he shouldn't have. But I mean, he wasn't, you know, as Lisa kind of says, like he wasn't wrong. And I think that's actually one of my favorite parts of this episode, is that Lisa is kind of the moral center in a lot of ways of the show. I mean, you know, Marge, I think, kind of has that role, too. But I think Lisa is oftentimes, a lot of the writers throughout the history of the series have said that she was their favorite character to write for, because she was kind of their proxy in a lot of ways, where she's kind of the outsider who feels like she's different from everyone else and her family doesn't quite fit in. And a lot of times I think how that ends up kind of showing off is that her character doesn't have as many flaws as it might have, because she does kind of become, to use a term I hate, kind of the Mary Sue a little bit, where she's kind of, you know, always right. You know, she's kind of the voice of sanity in this kind of crazy family.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that this episode, even though she has real balance and principled points, the fact of the matter is she didn't handle things the right way. You know, she destroyed kind of her dad's barbecue out of her own malice and was kind of mean, you know, but she takes accountability for it, which, you know, that's not something you would see Bart do.
Exactly.
You know, Bart sometimes learns his lesson, or even Homer to a lesser degree, you know, but Lisa learned. And I think it's important to show that. I think it was great. As you said, you're not expecting to get the message of tolerance from this episode, especially in the way it's portrayed, but especially not from a character like Lisa, who is kind of up to this point and overall, I think, is written as being one of the more tolerant characters. So the fact that she's the one who's learning the lesson of tolerance is really interesting.
I liked it. I think it flipped it on its head a little bit. And again, you know, there was even a greater message here too. So I quite liked this episode a lot. And, you know, up until I've been a vegetarian for, I think 5 years. Recently, I went to my doctor, and my doctor was like, I really need you to introduce some animal protein back into your life. And I was like, but do I have to? Yeah, you probably should. And you know, there are reasons that I'm not going to go into, but, I followed his directions and have started eating, white meat again, particularly poultry. And, you know, As a long-lived vegetarian, it was interesting watching this episode, because I've always tried to not be that stereotypical, like, you know how they say, if you do CrossFit, if you're a vegetarian or a vegan, and if you're, I can't remember what the third thing is, then everyone knows about it, because typically that person likes to share with the world that they're those things. I've always tried to not fall into that stereotype, but so it's just interesting seeing, you know, this character, A, kind of come to the realization and her reason for becoming a vegetarian, and then kind of have that, you know, I don't need to make everyone else around me not eat meat. This can just be about me type thing. So, it was a good episode. And like I said, it had kind of a personal, tie with me, where I could go, yeah, you know, this is something that I went through a little bit. It's interesting too, because I think, you know, whenever I first, became a vegetarian, everyone around me almost felt like, because I had made the decision, then they had to defend their choices for eating right. meat. And it's like, no, you know, I'm not asking you to change what you do. And so it's all very interesting, but, these kind of life choices that, end up influencing, I don't know, your day to day, how they can kind of change how others see you or, you know, how they think they should act and all that kind of thing. So yeah, this was a really good episode. And, I liked the less jokey, Apu, I guess, where rather that he's not just cast as a joke in this episode where he's just, you know, doing a bunch of funny things. And there was actually kind of a touching moment with him too. And he got to be kind of the teacher and the mentor in this episode. So that was, I'm happy that you chose that one for me.
Yay. Yay. At the end of the episode, actually, Maybe I'm Amazed plays over the credits. And if you play it back backwards, because it is hidden in, there is a recipe for a lentil soup. It's also, I think we should note that, you know, the Simpsons continuity record is mixed. It works well for some things, not great for others. But one of the things they have absolutely kept as continuity since, you know, 1995 when this episode aired. So, you know, this episode is 21 years old. It's a little over 20 years old. It aired in October 1995. So, you know, 20 years later, one of the great things is that Lisa is still a vegetarian.
Nice. She's maintained that. That's cool.
In the audio commentary, I think, for this episode the writer commentary on this episode, on the DVDs, that's the one thing that I hate about the lack of the online version is that, having the online versions is that those, commentary tracks, which are available on every episode of the show that's been released on DVD, they're not there. But, I think they discussed that they kind of made the decision after they made that choice for her that they were going to keep her vegetarian, and they've kept up with that. And that's, I think, notable, you know, and, I mean, in 1995, it wasn't a huge deal for people to be vegetarian. I mean, obviously it was a movement and it happened, and it was maybe kind of trendy because it was kind of a 90s, you know, health kick thing and whatnot, but still to do that and to keep that as part of her character going forward, you know, after the show had already been on for 7 years. I like that. And I like that they've kept that as part of her, you know, even in, cause again, in Das Bus, you know, the fact that she's not eating the boar.
Right. She's licking the moss instead. Cause she became a vegetarian in season 7.
Right.
Nice.
Right.
Cool. Well, yeah, I want to thank you for picking that episode for me. And, I think that, you know, for the listeners out there who may not have gotten into The Simpsons, there certainly are some episodes out there that can really, I don't know what the term is, pique your interest. And so I would definitely recommend both of these. And I'd also recommend the one that Christina had me watch, for the Christmas special, Marge Be Not Proud. That episode, A, made me cry.
That's also season 7.
And B, was just so doggone good and shows the more touching side of this show. It was great.
Yeah. I would say give all of season 7 a shot, because I really feel like that is, like, at least for my money, like, the strongest season of the show. And I know that there will be some people who will be who will disagree with that, but for my money, I love that season so much. And there are just so many good episodes. You know, Bart and Marge Be Not Proud is one of them. Radioactive Man episode is there. Bart sells his soul. Lisa's the vegetarian. There's an episode, King Size Homer, where Homer becomes very large. There's scenes from The Class Struggle in Springfield, which is one with the Simpsons joining a country club. There's Bart on the Road, where they go on a spring break trip. It's number 4'2". Which is a great kind of episode. Another Lisa-centric episode where she kind of invents a new personality for herself when they're on vacation and meets friends and kind of has to come to terms with, you know, being liked for herself. And it's very sweet. You know, there's Homer Palooza, where they go to Lollapalooza and Homer gets a job on the Carney circuit, being a freak because he can accept cannonballs shoved at his stomach. Regardless, season 7 is just, it's a great, great, great season. And even the Treehouse of Horror is very funny. It included the first 3D animation segment I think ever shown on television, which was a big deal at the time. And so there's so many really good ones, but season 7 is one of my absolute favorites. And you know, Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein, who were the executive producers, are, you know, to my mind, they were my favorite kind of showrunners for the show. And yeah, anyway, it's all good stuff.
You'll have to start there if you've yet to check it out. And, you know, I'm sure that Christina is open to getting your tweets about recommendations and things like that. But I'm curious, other than The Simpsons, what cartoons are you watching this week?
Okay, so I actually chose, because of the Bill Oakley, Josh Weinstein connection, I was gonna suggest one show, but I'm going to suggest another one. It's called Mission Hill. And you might have to find it on YouTube or on other means. Because I don't think it's available streaming anywhere, but it was a show that was created by Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein. Mm-hmm. So they were the showrunners for The Simpsons during season 7 and 8. And they also wrote a lot during season 6. And I think they officially left the show kind of at the beginning of season 9. And but they had a show, their own show, that was aired on the WB from September 24th, 1999 to July 16th, 2000. And then it aired for a couple of weeks on Adult Swim in 2002. And basically there were supposed to be 18 episodes planned, but only 13 were produced. It is available on DVD, all 13 episodes. The one sad part is that the theme song, which was Cake, was the band Cake performed, but I don't believe is part of the DVD. And I think they had to change the music things, but it's basically about this guy, Andy, who's voiced by Wally Langham, who is in his third consecutive like post-college slump year. And so he's an aspiring cartoonist, and he used to work at like a waterbed store, but his boss was kind of ill-tempered, and he works basically kind of as an advertising agency, but he's trying to kind of cut it as a cartoonist. And his younger brother Kevin, who's 17, moves in with Andy after his parents moved to Wyoming. And so he's been kind of sheltered in suburban his whole life. He wants to go to a good college, and now he's living with his brother in the city. And they also have his friend Jim, who's played by Brian Poston, who's just kind of a stoner kind of guy. And then there's this woman, Posey, who's in her mid-20s, and she's also their loft mate, and she's kind of a hippie. And then they have a dog. And it's just, it's a fun show, because it's kind of, there's one episode in particular that sticks out to me, which was a complete parody of The Real World.
Nice.
And if you remember that show, it's totally a parody of like the 1990s version of The Real World, where they write, you know, kind of they have the same style of like writing, you know, the graffiti, you know, kind of on the screen to show where characters are, and kind of having them do, you know, confessional moments and things like that. it's an interesting show, because it was kind of showing kind of a 20-somethings, you know, kind of living kind of post-college life in a cartoon. It's funny. I liked it because I liked the two guys who created the show. I mean, like I said, it didn't do tremendously well, but it was kind of an interesting kind of, you know, adult oriented cartoon. In a lot of ways, it had a lot of things in comparison, I think, with later on with things like American Dad. You know, kind of the character of Steve and the character of Kevin are kind of similar. It was a different sort of show to kind of air. And it was trying to be, I think, kind of a more adult-oriented cartoon to appeal to people in their 20s. Mm-hmm. It didn't really take off, but it was a good show. And you can still sometimes catch the reruns on Adult Swim.
I've seen a few episodes of this, and I, you know, I didn't remember what it was called, but I can recall having seen a few episodes of this. And that's, I think that's the most important part, the kind of audience that it's for. It's very clearly directed to those kind of post-college or even in college, where you can kind of...
Even in college, yeah, totally. Yeah,
where you're going, okay, this is what I might be.
I discovered it when I was in college, because when it aired on Adult Swim, that's when I saw it. I didn't even remember it being on the WB, to be totally honest. Like, the period of time that it aired, the WB had a number of cartoon shows they attempted. So did UPN, for that matter, and none of them worked. And so I didn't even remember seeing it, but you know, when I discovered it on Adult Swim later on, I was like, oh, this is actually really funny. And, you know, I bought the DVD, but it's a good show. It's totally one of those, it's worth checking out. It's worth kind of tracking down some of the episodes. I'm sure that they're all on the internet, available to view, but, the Real World episode is one of my favorites. And it, the voice actors, you know, Wally Langham is a good voice actor. So is, you know, Brian Poston. And, I think, it's fun.
Cool.
It's a good show. But that's my pick just because the Josh Weinstein Bill Oakley connection.
Nice.
Because, you know, that was their first post Simpsons show, and it's a shame it didn't work for them, but I think that it was a good show.
Very good. You like to bring it full circle, and I can appreciate that.
What about you? What are you watching this week?
This week I'm watching Chowder. I don't know if you've ever seen this Cartoon Network show.
I have not.
But once again, it's one of those just you're dropped into the mess of things, and you just kind of got to deal. What I like about Chowder though is the art style. It's one of those very, I don't even know how to describe it, and it probably has a name, but basically they use a lot of textures, and the characters, like, I don't even know how to describe this. It's really difficult. So if you can imagine, there's like a wavy texture in the background, so it looks kind of like a blue ocean or something like that, and they take a character and they draw it on top of that blue ocean, and it's all masked out so that when the character moves, the background stays the same, but the character moves in front of it. And so it's just kind of like using weird layered image masks to, do this really weird, textured style. So like some of the characters' hats will be a certain texture, and the texture doesn't move in the background, but the character does. And so it kind of creeps along with them. It's really weird, but it's quite enjoyable. And each character kind of has their own separate style, that they go along with. And so, I really like this show because, this was honestly my introduction to the more weird side of these kind of kids cartoons. Chowder is what got me interested in wanting to watch, Adventure Time and Regular Show eventually, and all of these other shows. Chowder was the jumping off point, and, there's a main character, and his name's Chowder, and he's like this purple little, I don't know, other than describe him as hungry and a child, are the two things that I could use to describe Chowder. And he works for, he works at a bakery. He's kind of like an apprentice under Mung Dahl. And he cooks all this weird stuff, and his wife's name is Truffles. And then they have an assistant named Schnitzel. And Truffles is
love it.
Yes. Truffles is the, she's just kind of, you know, no nonsense, and is very like, everybody be quiet and shut up. And she has wings and she flies around for some reason. And Schnitzel, if I remember correctly, Schnitzel doesn't even talk. He kind of like, rah, 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 rah. It's a very strange show, but it's totally worth your time to at least watch a few episodes and just, I don't know. It's fun because all of the concepts are super bizarre, and like the world that they live in, it's called Marzipan City. And, you know, the characters in it are very strange, and everything's just kind of blown out of proportion in terms of, you know, what they have to do each day and even how they all react to different things. And, there's an episode where Chowder has like he's hungry at night, and so his stomach kind of gets a mind of its own, and they have to tie him down and make sure that his stomach doesn't go eat things, but it doesn't end up working. And there's another episode where they have to deliver, it's kind of like at a pizza place where they say, you know, we'll deliver the pizza to you in 2 hours. And if it doesn't get to you in 2 hours, then we won't charge you. So they make some very expensive, meal, and then they have to deliver it to this guy. And so they go on the delivery. And of course the person is like hidden away way up, you know, on top of this mountain or whatever. And they have to go on this long journey to try and get to the top of the mountain and get it there in time. So it's really fun. And like I said, it's just another one of those shows that is just super bizarre, and you just kind of go, mm-hmm. Okay, you know, I'm jumping in head first, and we're going to do this. And again, that art style, Christine, I just recommend that you check, even if you just like watch a trailer of it, the art style is totally. Just so weird. And I love how that's done. Where, like I said, it's kind of the clothes of the character are masked out, and then the background doesn't move, but the character does. And it, I don't know, it just adds an extra layer of like, A, intrigue, like how did they do that? And then B, just a different way of doing things. So yeah, they also like to tie in different portions of like puppeteering and stuff like that. And so they'll do cutaways, kind of like with Clarence, where they'll do cutaways to puppets or other live action stuff. And yeah, it's really fun. So it's clear that there's a very artistic bunch behind the show. And I think that's one of the reasons that I ended up liking it. But, you know, I watched Chowder and then I watched The Misadventures of Flapjack, and then my kind of...
Oh, I love that show!
It's a lot like that. It's a lot like The Misadventures
of... I love Flapjack. I just call it Flapjack. I know it's The Misadventures of Flapjack, but I just call it Flapjack because I love the...
Yes.
I love Flapjack.
Such a good show.
Okay, so this is a Cartoon Network show. Is it available online? Like, is it on Netflix or Hulu or anything?
I know it's on Amazon Prime Video.
Oh, okay. It's on Prime. Okay, yeah. Well, then that's great.
Yeah, so you can... listeners, you can watch it on Prime, and I'm not positive. It might be on Netflix. I'm not 100% sure, but I know for sure it's on Prime. So you can definitely check it out there. There Excellent. Are 65 episodes and well worth your time. So yeah, Christina, where can people find you online?
Well, you can find me on Twitter, Snapchat, et cetera, at film_girl. You can find my writing, which sadly has not been about cartoons. It has mostly been about the FBI at Mashable.com. And court cases. And you?
Well, you can find me at Twitter at Micah Sargent, and you can find my work at newsy.com.
You can find the show notes at theincomparable.com/cartooncast/8. Be sure to give us a rating and review in iTunes.
And you can follow us at our Tumblr. It's at cartooncast.co. Or you can find our Twitter at cartoon_cast, where you can tweet us about the Simpsons shows you're watching, or if you checked out, you know, one of the shows that we recommended here.
Yeah, tell us about Chowder. Tell us your favorite Chowder story.
Yes, I want to know what you think about the art style of Chowder. I'm serious. I'm waiting for you. That's all, folks.